Hi, my name's Ron Frenz, and you are listening to the Cave of Solitude podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and for episode 128, you are going to be flying solo with me once again. No Daft J, no Shane Heron, no Martin Slam Duncan, but if you do want to hear the three of us, myself, Shane Heron, Martin Slam Duncan, head over to the Fastball Special. Because on episode 42, we are all together discussing our top five favorite Survivor movies. But for this episode, as you can hear from the theme music in the background, we're going to be discussing something a little bit different. We're going to get into a little bit of classic comic talk. So I figured, since we took a bit of a hiatus, I haven't really been able to discuss any comic talk, interview anybody, do a movie review. Well, we did movie review for Ant-Man. That's not true. But I read a lot of books. And Daft J, my regular co-host, won't read a lot of the stuff that I like. And that's okay, because I don't think she would appreciate it the way I do. But with all the stuff that I do read, I figure I should press the record button every now and then. And if there's something that I really like or really recommend or left an impression on me, I should share it with you, the listener. So one of the things I do when I go on vacation, like many people do, I love deciding what I'm going to read. Now, for me, this is a lot of fun, but it's also excruciatingly painful because I've got so many books that I haven't read. There's the pile of shame that most comic book collectors have. And a lot of times there's books I have in mind that I know that's a good one to read on vacation. I'm going to bring that big oversized trade that's got a lot of issues in it. So being on, whether you're on a beach, at a resort, or like I was in Italy, we were traveling on a bus, on a coach bus for a good portion of the trip going from city to city. So sometimes, with that being the case, there's stretches of 3 to 4 hours worth where you're going to be on the bus. So when me and Daft J wouldn't be talking or napping to try to re-energize, I'd love pulling out my comic books and having something to read. Now, those of us who read comic books or collected formats, I'm not a digital reader yet, so if you're thinking, why don't you just bring a digital reader with you? I'm not into that as yet. I probably should be. But it would require me to have to rebuy a lot of the things I already own and want to read. So I haven't gone into that realm yet. What was I saying? People who read comic books or collected editions, especially more modern ones, you could get through these books really fast. The 6 issues of comics can take you, 45 minutes to an hour, if that. So you can't bring 10 graphic novels with you. Just the weight in itself is ridiculous. So I brought with me, as you can see in the title, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, The Avengers, the Kurt Busiek and George Perez run. It's 3 trades worth. I also brought with me an epic collection just in case I read through these fast. Editor's note. This is 34 issues of Kurt Busiek and George Perez's classic run on The Avengers. It's celebrated, very well regarded. I'm a bit of a jerk to have to recommend this because these aren't the easiest traits to get anymore. For some reason, when you go on Amazon, they're not in stock, or some of them are being sold for way too much of a price tag. But if you do want to read them, you can get them digitally for cheap, and you can still look for them. They can be found, but that was part of the appeal to read these books, because it was a hunt for me to find them. And I had always heard, I read the first 2 trades. For the most part, I read almost all of the issues in the first 2 trades, but it didn't resonate with me the first time as much as it did this time. So I wanted to return to these and give them a fresh take. So I've always heard how well-regarded this series is, and Kurt Busiek and George Perez, in their own right, are unequivocally known as comic book legends, one being a great writer, one being a fantastic penciler and writer in his own right. Some of the things that they've worked on previously, I guess I should mention, if you're not completely aware of it, Kurt Busiek made his bones writing such books as Marvels, which is a miniseries from Marvel, illustrated by Alex Ross, absolutely beautiful book. He, at the same time that he was writing this particular series of Volume 3 of the Avengers, he was also writing the Thunderbolts, which in its own right is very, very well regarded. He was also writing Iron Man with artist Sean Chen. He's written Superman. He's written pretty much everything there is to write in comic books. And he's also very, very critically acclaimed for his creator-owned title, Astro City, which is kind of like its own universe where a lot of the characters are pastiches of superheroes that we know and love, such as Superman or Wonder Woman, things like that. But it's kind of an anthology collection that he does. He's still writing it. Great series in itself. And George Perez, of course, is one of the most famous, most celebrated, most beloved comic book artists of all time. You've definitely seen, if you've ever seen superheroes, George Perez's art is basically the visual library of superheroes that any fan would have. He's done the new Teen Titans. He's done Crisis on Infinite Earths for DC, which is a game changer. And his art is extremely detailed. The storytelling in it is perfectly paced. And his pages are busy and full of frenetic energy and everything you want to see in a superhero comic. Almost, for Daph J, she always says, oh, it's too busy, too much is happening. But for those of us who love superhero comics, he is pretty much the quintessential guy to have, especially on a team book. He's the type of artist who, the more you ask him to draw, the more characters there are on the page, the more he'll give you. If you ask for 100 characters on a page, he'll give you 150. To just give you an idea, if you've never seen George Perez's work, but if you're listening to this, more than likely it's because you like George Perez and Kurt Busiek or this Avengers run. So to set the stage, I feel it's kind of important to understand the era that this book was being published, or this volume had been released. So in 1996, if memory serves me correct, Marvel Comics had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This was before the Disney days. This was before the Marvel Cinematic Universe days, when the Avengers were the most in vogue thing in media, pretty much, right? I'm recording this on the day that the Avengers Infinity War DVD has been released, and people are just excited for a DVD release. They're posting it on their social media. So we live in a time where the Avengers are bigger than ever, but once upon a time in the mid-90s, they weren't quite the cream of the crop as they are today. So in 1996, as I said, Marvel was filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They had hit a peak of comic book sales in the early 90s with many of the events and all of the speculation that was happening in the collector's market, but now it was about to crash. So what they did was they took some of their properties, namely the Fantastic Four and the Avengers, and then all of the solo characters that are included in the Avengers, such as Captain America or Iron Man, etc., etc. They sent them back, or they gave them to the studios of Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, who had made their bones and their fame working for Marvel Comics. Rob Liefeld is most famously known as being the creator of Deadpool and Cable, who now have, in Deadpool 2, their own movie. So these guys were in the early 90s, Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld were selling comics, probably the highest selling, I think X-Men number one is the highest selling comic of all time, which was drawn by Jim Lee. So these guys were kind of like, how can I put it in terms for people to understand? It's not quite this way, but this is the best analogy I can think of if you're a wrestling fan. These guys were like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. They became who they were working for the WWE. Then they went off on their own with the fame that they had garnered from being part of that mega conglomerate. Then they went off and became, in a way, bigger stars or even bigger celebrities with the names that they had established. And now they're coming back to give Marvel Comics a shot in the arm, a boost, as it were, with their failing properties. So what they did was Marvel Comics gave these IPs to Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld's studio, And the storyline that they had set up was basically that there was this huge event. As we know in comics, there's always a huge event. This one was called Onslaught. It affected the entire Marvel universe. But they had given them these titles to relaunch, and the characters were transported into a parallel universe with a history that was very distinct from the mainstream Marvel universe. They were no longer in the regular continuity that Spider-Man and the X-Men existed. And they did okay sales-wise, you know, but critically, nobody remembers these books fondly. They went for about 12 issues, maybe a full calendar year's worth of issues were released under this Heroes Reborn title. And then Marvel decided to discontinue the experiment, and then they returned the Avengers and the Fantastic Four to the Marvel Universe proper, and it was called Heroes Return. Sounds very convoluted. It was a failed experiment, but now you're taking these characters who people had kind of lost interest in. You still had your fans and followers, but now you had to restore them to their glory. And they had asked George Perez to come back on and be the artist for the Avengers once again, because early in his career, he had made his bones basically being an Avengers artist. So now they're bringing back a legend. As the heroes return, the legend returns. And he requested for Kurt Busiek to be the writer on the series. Now, Kurt Busiek, what makes him a great choice for this is that he really, really loves superheroes. You can see it in his writing. You can see it in the way that he opens up this series of the Avengers Volume 3. So the year is now 1998. The heroes are returning to the regular Marvel Universe. I wasn't collecting Avengers at this time. I wasn't reading Marvel at this time. If I had any spare change, I would buy a Superman comic. Unfortunately, at this time, they weren't very good, but I didn't know better. So I'm not sure what the anticipation was for fans, what they were expecting from this book to be or what they wanted this book to be. But I guess having George Perez as the main artist was a good sign. So the series opens up, and I'm going to be taking some of my information that I share with you from InsidePulse.com. This was an article written by James Fulton. This is from September 11th, 2015. And the reason why I'm quoting from it is because I'm not going to go through a issue by issue summary, because I'd be really, really bad at it. I'm bad at remembering all of the little intricate details of comic book storylines and plot lines. I remember that I like them. I can't always remember all of the intricacies, like I said. So the series opens up introducing the fact that so many heroes have returned to this regular Marvel universe after the nonsense that happened in that Heroes Reborn event. And it's been resolved in some way. Throughout the cities of the world, we see that various monsters and mythological creatures are appearing out of nowhere, attacking all sorts of Avengers or people who had been members of the Avengers in the past. And then they disappear. The monsters disappear. So Captain America, Wasp, the Giant, Iron Man, they have a meeting at Avengers Mansion for the first time since they've all returned to their proper reality. Now Thor arrives, and it's important. This scene is important because Thor has been presumed dead. He hadn't returned back with the rest of the heroes at the same time, so they had all presumed him dead, but now he's here, and this is basically the original Avengers squad on the page, other than Captain America, who came in a few issues after the first Avengers team. This is a roll call, basically, of the original founding members of the Avengers. So at this meeting, Cap and Thor explain what's been happening, and it seems that Asgard and the other nine realms have been emptied. The Bifrost Bridge, as well as Asgard, has been destroyed. And to make matters worse, something called the Twilight Sword is missing, as are the Norn Stones, which they do something. I don't remember what they do. That's why I'm reading it from here. So one of the things to take note of with these comics that I had mentioned in the opening part is that they're dense. They're very wordy. You get your money's worth. If you paid $2 for this issue, you weren't going to read it in 10 minutes. It would take you a good 15 to 20 minutes just to read one issue. It's packed with information, which is not a bad thing. So the getting back to the storyline, the Avengers are split into five teams to search out the stones and the Norn sword that's missing. Sorry, the Twilight sword that is missing. Am I right? The Twilight sword? Yeah. Anyways, they split up into five teams. They get caught up in a weird storm that Wanda Maximoff is able to stop on one of those squads that they split up into. They find the Twilight Sword, but they also find Mordred, who captures Wanda in the Earth. The rest of them fight and best him pretty quickly. And then they discover that Morgan Le Fay is behind all of this and that she needs Wanda Maximoff's powers to be able to use the Twilight Sword. And once the sword is in her hand, everything goes white. And we learn that Morgan Le Fay has rewritten reality, making herself the ruler of medieval world. And the Avengers get a medieval makeover themselves in this new reality that they are once again transferred to. Captain America is now known as Yeoman America. Iron Man is the Iron Knight and so on. And they're all working for Morgan Le Fay. And this makes Mordred nervous. So this is kind of a joke on the fact that once in the first story arc of this new series, the Avengers are immediately transferred into a alternate reality, which in the dialogue between Captain America and Hawkeye, once they realize that they have once again been put into another dimension or alternate reality, they crack jokes about it, like, oh no, not this again, sort of thing. So I'm not going to go into the whole plot. Obviously, they defeat Morgan Le Fay, but what's cool about it is that almost everyone who has ever been an Avenger is required to do this. This is how they bring the team back together in a way that anybody who's ever read the Avengers throughout the decades will find something that they relate to and remember. It really captures the essence of it. So you see all the Avengers you've known and loved, the different iterations of possible teams that you recognize. And in the process, while I mentioned before, Wanda Maximoff had been captured by the main villain, Morgan Le Fay, in order for her to harness her power to the maximum. In escaping, the Scarlet Witch somehow has been able to summon the Wonder Man, Simon Williams, who, what's interesting about him is that years ago in the comic book continuity, he had sacrificed his life and died. But Simon Williams and the Vision are linked because the Vision's brain patterns, him being an android, his brain patterns are based off of Simon Williams' personality, which we know if we've seen the movie, Scarlet Witch and the Vision have had there's a romance between the two of them. But in the comics, they had been married. So as the series progresses in subsequent issues, eventually, Wonder Man / Simon Williams is brought back to life in full physical form. And there is a love triangle between the three of them. Because at this point in time of the Avengers mythology, the Vision had, quote unquote, died once upon a time. And in his justification, in order to cope with his own pain, He allows Wanda to be free. He says, you know what, I died once upon a time, so that technically no longer makes us married. So in order for us to not have to suffer this anymore and for you to go on with your life, our relationship is over. I'm a robot. It's okay. I'm an android. Don't worry about that. You move on with your life. But I say that to say this. This is the beginning of many of the subplot lines that you find within this series, which is one of the best features of it, because there as many characters as there are on a team book, a lot of times, like when you read something, for instance, like the Justice League, you've got all of these solo characters with their own solo titles, and the major things that are happening to them take place in those books. And the same can be said with the Avengers. All of these, Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, they all have their own solo titles. But Kurt Busiek pays homage to the original feel of the Avengers, where a lot of major plot points and character development takes place within Avengers Mansion. So Scarlet Witch, Wonder Man, the Vision, that's just one subplot that you're getting, which is extremely interesting because of the fact that they are inextricably linked. Just the brain patterns, the personality types, and the fact that Simon Williams in the past had always had a affection for Wanda, which would explain why the Vision had an affection for Wanda, and Wanda would, instead of having affection for Simon Williams, have an affection for the Vision. So there's a lot of complicated relationship things. It's very soap opera-like, but that's just one aspect of, you know, the subplots within the book. In issue four, once that initial storyline is done, they form the new team of the Avengers, which includes the equivalent of the Marvel's Trinity. You got Captain America, Thor, Iron Man. The Scarlet Witch is on the team. The Vision is still being repaired, so he's not officially there. Hawkeye is included. Carol Danvers is included, who is going to go by Warbird in this series. Carol Danvers, of course, being Miss Marvel traditionally. As well, Kurt Busiek adds two new members to the team as reserve members, being Justice and Firestar, characters from the New Warriors, who are, it's basically like taking members of the Teen Titans and putting them as reserve members onto the Justice League, which is also a nice touch. So all of those characters that have been included on the team have been given their own subplots and character development storylines that are very engaging, and they come into play through different story arcs as you're reading this book. And these aren't written, these issues aren't written in the more commonly traditional way today of six issue story arcs. They're one and done's, they're, you know, three issues, they're two issues, but you've got all of these different things happening with the characters throughout that you don't really want to skip anything, even if the adventure per se isn't the most engaging as far as a fight sequence or whatnot, because what is happening within those sequences and how the characters are interacting with each other is what's crucial to the story. That's what makes this series as interesting as it is. So as I look at the Avengers lineup for this Volume 3, the way it starts off, you got Captain America, Miss Marvel, Iron Man, The Vision, Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, Thor, and Justice and Firestar. So Carol Danvers here, you come to learn that she's got a bit of an alcohol problem. She's being reckless when she's on adventures with the team, and she puts, in order to prove herself, she's very reckless, does a couple of irresponsible things to try to prove how in control she is, just further proving how uncontrollable she is. So she eventually gets court-martialed from the team. And of course, Tony Stark, having had alcohol and substance abuse problems of his own, is aware of this before anybody else is, because he sees the telltale signs of that. So that in itself is an interesting subplot. You got Justice and Firestar, who are a young couple that are engaged, who were part of a smaller superhero team, who've never had the high stakes issues of being Avengers. Justice, it's his dream to be an Avenger. Firestar, not so much. But as the story progresses, Firestar is a much better fit for the Avengers in her role. She's a little bit more confident, a little bit more sure of herself, whereas Justice has a lot of hero worship and is suffering from confidence. So that progression of storyline and how the dynamics of their relationship are affected, as well as how they're used on the team, very interesting. Once again, as I mentioned, Wanda and Vision and Wonder Man, once Wonder Man comes back to life, that's also very, Vision and Wonder Man come to blows at one point down the line in issue 23 or 24. And that the dialogue that they share is very introspective. You've got Thor, who hasn't been given his own title just yet when this book is launched. But in Dan Jurgens's run of Thor, Thor is once again bonded with a human. So his interaction with the team is touch and go. He's very frustrated in certain scenes. He leaves active membership of the team. He still appears throughout it, but then by issue 24, he leaves it for good for a time. And one of the other things that is taking place as well in this series that can't be left out is Kurt Busiek addresses the fact that the Avengers as a team have been traditionally whitewashed. So outside of Avengers Mansion, throughout this series, you've got protesters, people that are protesting for the Avengers to be more inclusive in their team membership. But on the flip side, you've got other protesters who are saying, we got to get rid of the mutants. They're a danger. So you've got your extremists, you got your alt-right people, and then you've got your liberals on the other side, which is, this is a 20-year-old book. And for them to be talking about this back then was, I think, a bit of ahead of its time. A character I left out was Hawkeye, who, as the Avengers are being formed in issue 4 of this volume, he's kind of feeling threatened in his position because he was once a leader of the Avengers West Coast team. So he kind of feels like he's always being undermined by Captain America, really wants to prove himself, and it's actually on his request that Justice and Firestar be included on the team because he sees the potential in them. And Hawkeye, being kind of the natural-born leader that he is, he comes to at odds with Captain America, who, in his own title, is kind of trying to get back to his own reality, having been away and trying to find his place in the world once again. So with all the things that are taking place in his own personal life, it's kind of affecting his skills as a leader in regards to the team, where eventually him and Wanda Maximoff, Scarlet Witch, are sharing the load of being leaders of the Avengers at this time. One of the highlights of this first volume, as much as I love George Perez's work, you get an annual featuring Carlos Pacheco, first drawing the Avengers, who at the end of this first year of 1998, him and Kurt Busiek would write Avengers Forever, which, if you are, again, a fan of the Avengers, you've probably read this already, but if you haven't and you just love comic books, superhero comics, and Avengers mythology, you've got to read that book. It is fantastic. The art is fantastic. It is a true love letter and testament to Kurt Busiek's appreciation for the legacy of the people who came before him. And that's another thing that needs to be addressed with this summary of the book. Sometimes when a comic book is relaunched or they got to give it a fresh start, the writer or the artist try to ignore some of the things that have happened that may have been in bad taste, may have been poor story choices, maybe didn't really make sense continuity-wise. There might be some sort of plot holes within the entire tapestry of the team itself. Kurt Busiek doesn't do that. He really pays respect to everything that had come before in Avengers lore. So if you were a fan of the Roy Thomas and original John Buscema run, there's things that specifically reference those books, and he does it in a way that doesn't leave you left out. You don't have to have read that. It always helps that you do because it means more to you, but he does it in a way that puts everything into context into the story that he's telling. If you like the Roger Stern and John Buscema run, again, that heavily influences this team of the Avengers. Everything counts for Kurt Busiek in this run. He doesn't ignore anything, and that's, going back to Miss Marvel, Carol Danvers, the reason why she is kind of in the state that she's in her personal life is because of things that had happened to her a number of years ago within the Avengers timeline. I think it was issue 200. It's famously known as being an issue where some pretty bad things have happened to Carol Danvers. So as a result, she's going through it right now. She's got a substance abuse problem in order to cope with some of the trauma that she's experienced. One of my favorite arc of this, for the first 34 issues of Kurt Busiek's run with George Perez, is the Ultron Unlimited storyline, which is in issues 19 to 22. It's near the end of the second volume of this book. It's basically, safe to say, it was the inspiration for the Age of Ultron movie, the sequel to Avengers. A lot of people don't like that movie. I personally enjoyed it. It's not perfect, but this story arc of Ultron is pretty close to being perfect. It really captures the threat of a villain that Ultron is. while paying, again, homage to the legacy of Ultron and his numerous permutations. And it ties in Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne's connection to Ultron, which, as I mentioned in the Ant-Man review of the movie, Hank Pym is actually the creator of Ultron. So Ultron has a real Oedipus complex with Hank Pym. He's created other androids throughout Avengers history to kind of be a carbon copy, as it were, of Janet Van Dyne. So there's all these different elements of being all this Avengers history that is being utilized and used to tell a very compelling story. And all of the subplots that I had mentioned before with the characters in the roll call that I had from issue 4, and as well as reserve members and previous members of the Avengers, such as Hank Pym and the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, I should say, all of them are coming into play within this particular story arc of Ultron Unlimited. It's really, really well done. I don't want to, again, get into the entire summary of it, but everybody, all the players on the chessboard are being used really well. And Kurt Busiek doesn't do it in a hackneyed way. He doesn't try to erase any of the history. He doesn't try to ignore any of the history, but he really does his due diligence to honor it, to recognize that it happened, and he uses it in a way to elevate the current story that you're reading without you feeling lost in the process. So, I mean, I could go on and on. We've been talking for over a half hour about this thus far. I had a great time reading it. It took a while to get through, which I will say could be a drawback for some people who like going through their comics quickly and don't like it to be too verbose. So to summarize the summary now, I can't speak highly enough about George Perez's art. There's very, very, very few people who I would put on a higher pedestal than him. You can see how much fun he's having drawing this book with Alvey doing a wonderful job on the inks. There's no question which character is who. All of his faces are very distinct. The details he puts just even in like Wanda Maximoff's hair. It seems silly to reference that, but it's there. He puts together pages. Like, I remember Howard Chaykin saying at one of the latest cons that a comic book page represents time. And a great artist knows how to utilize that space of time. And I can't say enough how no one does that better than George Perez. He's got some panels that are 12 panel pages, and it's cluttered and it's busy and there's so much happening, but at the same time, you're not unsure of what's happening. As busy as it is, you can very clearly see the story he's telling, and it's very captivating. You're totally engaged in it, and you can take a moment to pause from reading and really take a look at what he's doing. Even in these small little panels that he makes, you're totally engaged. You're not lost. You're not unsure what you're looking at. And his expression, his facial expressions, his body language, I can't even put it to words how much I enjoy the work that he did in this book. And he did 31 issues complete himself. I have to mention Jerry Ordway did 3 fill-in issues of a really good storyline, fun storyline he wrote and did the art for it, which, you know, if you're going to have a fill-in from someone to do Avengers, why not get Jerry Ordway? It was a lot of fun with the Masters of Evil as the villain team that they were up against. But yeah, George Perez, going back to him, he did 31 issues. A number of them were oversized issues, and he's drawing his butt off throughout this book. It's incredible. I will say, as much as I'm gushing over it, one thing I don't like about George Perez's art, believe it or not, I'm not a big fan of his costume designs. So there's a character in these stories that I didn't mention who eventually joins the Avengers. His name's Triathlon. He's an African-American character, as I said in one of the plot lines. There is the protesters outside who are insisting on having a more diverse group of people representing the team. There's also this cult that Triathlon is a part of called the Triune of Understanding, which is an analog of Scientology. From Kurt Busiek actually said that on a podcast. He was referencing them, and they play a role in the influence that the media is having on the viewpoint of the Avengers. The Avengers are coming out under a lot of scrutiny for many of the things they're doing until Triathlon conveniently is wrenched into the team, not because the Avengers don't want to have him on the team, but it just so happens that he finds a way to be on the team, and then public opinion slowly starts to change. So I say all that to say this: Triathlon's costume is not very good. I'm not a big fan of Justice and Firestar's costumes as well. So, I mean, George Perez does a lot of things fantastic. His costume designs have always been a little bit over the top. You can think of like Nightwing in the new Teen Titans, where he's given the high collar, the disco Nightwing costume, they call it. So that's one of the things that I'm not a huge fan of. You got another character introduced, Silverclaw, who is a child that Jarvis, the butler of the Avengers, he sponsors this child. She becomes a honorary member of the Avengers in a storyline, which was okay. But her costume design, again, is not that great. It's very of the time, and even not of the time. It's very much of a traditional superhero era where the costumes are all superhero costumes are ridiculous. These ones are really ridiculous. So that's one thing that I'm not a huge fan of. But the traditional Avengers characters, fantastic. I love them. And again, I can't say enough how much Kurt Busiek honors the history of the Avengers. This is some of the best work that he's ever done. He uses classic foes, obscure foes, things that people may have forgotten. Sometimes his flashbacks are a little bit too long and unnecessary, but again, that's all because of how much he cares about telling you a complete, concise story without you feeling left out or not knowing what it is that you're reading. So if at all this summary has convinced you, I highly recommend the Kurt Busiek, George Perez run on the Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Avengers Assemble is what it's called. You can find them in comic book back bins for cheap. You can find them used bookstores. You can find them digitally. If you like the Avengers and you want to have a really fun, timeless Avengers story, one that isn't overly affected by contemporary pop culture, one that follows the tradition of classic Avengers storytelling and pays tribute to it, this is one of the best things you could read in regards to Avengers comics. It received numerous awards. I mean, Wizard Magazine, I think 3 years in a row, gave it best series, best writer, best artist. I know Wizard Magazine was a very partial publication at the time as a comic book magazine. I mean, pre-internet, that was the best thing that we had. So, but it, needless to say, it was fans writing in, picking who their favorite artists and writers were. So again, this series is celebrated top to bottom from a lot of people. A lot of comic book fans, a lot of comic book reviewers. If you love your traditional superheroes, if you're into traditional superhero storytelling, it gets no better than this. If you're a big fan of your modern day, more edgy, creator-owned kind of comics where you want to stray away from the genre of superheroes, this might not be for you. But I highly recommend it. I will, as I read different books, I will try to recommend more diverse options for people to read, but this being the most recent thing that I read as a whole chunk of on my recent vacation, I thought, while it's still fresh in my mind and something that I really, really enjoyed and would like to talk about, I thought I'd give, I guess now we're at 40 minutes to be able to talk to Cave of Solitude audience, whoever you are. So thank you again for listening. I had fun talking to everybody about this. I had fun reading it. I hope you do too. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Don't forget to listen to the Fastball Special. Also, a special shout out to one of my favorite podcasts, the Comic Shenanigans podcast, hosted by Adam Chapman, who just celebrated their 600th episode. If you enjoy comic interviews, comic talk, comic book reviews, it's a great show. Definitely check it out. Shout out to Adam Chapman. Hopefully he'll be on the show himself soon, and I'll probably be crossing over to his show as well to talk about more superhero geeky stuff. So again, thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and follow us on Facebook. I am Eric Anthony. We will be back soon.